Movie Mavericks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Movie Mavericks, speaking of fucking long, uncut European cocks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Now for your hosts, Jason and Trevor.
I can't wait.
Hey now, everybody. Welcome to episode 309 of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. I'm Trevor Anderson, sending you over to Jason Rugard. He's got a rundown for us.
On tonight's show, we'll be doing our movie trivia, talking about Guy Ritchie in for Aladdin, the new Bad Mom spinoff, an emoji movie that's coming towards you, and Daniel Craig's intentions with James Bond. Review for Deepwater Horizon, Central Intelligence, The Conjuring, and The New Purge. Trailers featuring Will Smith, Nicolas Cage, and a whole bunch of stars. We've got a lot of trailers today, including Mark Wahlberg and Jamie Foxx's latest. Also, our streaming online pick is an oldie but a goodie. Stay with us. We've got a lot of show for you guys. First, let's start with this trivia, as always. I found this one to be a hard trivia question here. But
really?
Let's see. Yeah, let's see if you got it. Did you peek? Did you see this already?
Well, I'm looking at the whole thing, so I do.
Okay.
So I have a guess, but I don't know if I'm right. But go ahead.
So which 1990 comedy from New Line Cinema was originally written for DJ Jazzy Jeff and The Fresh Prince, a.k.a. Will Smith? This would have been Will Smith's first starring vehicle, well before Made in America, when he did a guest appearance in that movie, and Six Degrees of Separation before Bad Boys and everything. And this all came about because New Line Cinema won a lawsuit against Will Smith and DJ Jazzy Jeff from their use of the song A Nightmare on My Street, which had a significant amount of the score from Nightmare on Elm Street incorporated into that song. Widely available out there on YouTube if you've never seen it. It's a fun little song from the 80s. They sued them, they won, so legally they were bound to appear in this movie, but the director of the film refused to put them in the movie and cast a different duo in this. Do you know the movie, and for extra points, do you know the duo they were replaced by?
I'm sure I know the movie, but let me first by starting off. I know two New Line Cinema movies that came out in 1990. And I'm going to guess Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is not the one we're talking about.
It is not the film we're talking about.
But it could be. But my guess is going to be House Party.
It is, yeah.
And Kid and Play, right?
Yeah. And I guess Reginald Hudlin, who directed that film, absolutely refused to put them in the movie. But it's strange that had to be one of his first directing jobs, if not his first, and he had the power to sway them. But that would have been a totally different experience with Will Smith. I liked the House Party movies. Did you ever go back and watch them? I mean, the part two.
I haven't been back to watch them. Yeah, there's four or five of them, aren't there?
Yeah, they got real bad at one point.
Oh, yeah.
They got real bad. I think after three, they got to be like TV, kind of like Revenge of the Nerds, you know, like those fell off and became TV movies at some point.
If you say so. I mean, I Revenge of the Nerds is pretty steadily bad. All four of them.
I know. I just think after number two, they became like straight to TV movies.
Or
things like that. By the way, did you see the Goldbergs last week? Adam was wearing a Revenge of the Nerds 2 t-shirt.
Yeah.
Very sly little homage to that. All right, let's talk about some movie stuff here. Guy Ritchie, he's in for Aladdin. You know that? They're going to make the live-action Aladdin remake. These things are selling like hotcakes with Jungle Book and
live-action remake of every Disney cartoon imaginable, right?
Everything in their catalog.
Everything? You know? Yeah, everything.
Everything. All day, every day. And Ang Lee smartly passed on the Mulan live-action remake. Because, like you said, they are raping their catalog for films.
Yeah, and you know, none of these guys are going to be able to do... they're not going to be able to put their spin on these. And so I'm not surprised Ang Lee's not really interested. They're going to be Disney, and I imagine they're going to say, do it this way, right?
Yeah, they're going to be heavily controlled. You didn't think that. I mean, I liked the Jungle Book movie. You didn't, but I'll say this: it didn't necessarily have a personality.
Zero personality.
Mm-hmm, which was pretty.
It just exists.
I liked it, but I didn't think like it had like a defining personality at all.
Uh-huh.
All right, you know, the Bad Moms movie did very, very well at the box office, and surprise, they're doing a spinoff, Bad Dads, next summer.
Okay.
Are they running this into the ground? Are you good with this?
Well, we got Bad Santa too. We have Bad everything, right? So I guess I'm fine with that. I haven't seen Bad Moms yet. I'm sure it's decent. So I'll take more bad stuff.
The bad stuff has been up and down, right? I mean, not everything labeled bad. There's been movies that are in the bad genre, but they haven't been labeled bad, I should say. You know what I mean? Like, there's ones that could fit into the whole, like, bad teacher, obviously, bad Santa, bad moms, but there's, you know, bad cops. There's all sorts of things. Let's Be Cops, I would kind of say, would be bad cops. This
neighbors.
Whole subgenre. Yeah, obviously, yeah. The bad neighbors. It's kind of a subgenre.
I mean, yeah,
right?
Bad grandpa. You're really just talking about, these are just normal comedies, right? With just people who are bad. But when you think about most comedies, this is how they are, right? We're just being a little more honest, a little more easy on the titles, right?
Yeah.
But aren't most comedies like this?
The last one I found to be really effective like this was Bad Teacher, though. I think that one's a little underrated.
That one was good. I mean, Horrible Bosses were both decent. You know, they don't have bad in the name, but again, same idea, right? I mean, when people are bad, it's funny. So
yeah, I agree. So the Emoji Movie's coming at you. Did you know this was even a real thing? I can't believe this is an actual movie. But it doesn't surprise me after the Angry Birds movie came out and did so well.
Angry Birds didn't do all that well.
Made over $100 million, which is more than the Storks movie is going to be doing for Warner Brothers that's out currently. And I just was surprised that there was, I mean, when we saw the trailer for Angry Birds last year, I was like dumbfounded. I said, well, this is like 5 years too late. And talk about an emoji movie. I think this is too late.
Yeah.
But they've recruited TJ Miller and other people that are known to be in these kind of movies. And it's from Sony Illumination. So here we go.
It just seems, I mean, this thing is really silly. I don't know. I mean, an eggplant and a poop? I don't know.
They're doing a Trolls movie, so I can't discount anything anymore. I don't. Maybe I've lost the pulse, you know?
Oh, well. We're doing everything. Everything.
Whatever you got.
All right.
They're just green lighting everything over there.
Seriously, whatever they can get their hands on. All right.
Remember that Batman cartoon I was telling you about, Batman 66, a while back?
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about this. Well, that's recently been released on digital form. I'm dying to catch it. It's coming out on Blu-ray November 1st. It's called Batman Return of the Caped Crusaders. They've retitled it. But it's featuring the voice casting of Adam West, Burt Ward, and Mark Hamill, I believe, even as the Joker, who's unfortunately been stuck only doing that voice. We were talking off air about how good of an actor Hamill is. He never got a fair shake, really, you know, unfortunately. But
he doesn't.
This first of all, this cartoon I want to see because it looks to be the exact opposite of The Killing Joke, which was way too heavy and really unenjoyable. I mean, I know it's a heavy story, but they added 45 minutes to that. That was all backstory just to beef it up to feature length. That was just cliched and uninteresting. So this looks to be at least a little funner, drawn a little nicer. And William Shatner is going to voice Two-Faced in the sequel. They've already announced this. So they already have big plans for this. And I'm kind of excited because I'm a big fan of the animated stuff.
He has two faces.
Which will he use? This one or this one?
Am I evil or nice?
I love that, you know, urban myth about Nicholas Meyer on Wrath of Khan having to wear out Shatner with fake takes just to get him tired enough to start really acting, you know?
Right.
Which is believable because it's Shatner. Who knows?
I know.
How fucking old is William Shatner? He's got to be in his late 80s,
so
right?
So old, yeah. But still, I mean, chugging along and looking pretty good for his age.
For his age, I'll say that.
I mean,
did you watch any of that television show with him and Terry Bradshaw, George Foreman, and Henry Winkler?
I haven't seen that yet. Is that is it good? Have you seen
it? No, it's embarrassing for everybody involved.
Really?
I thought so.
Seemed kind of silly, but sometimes could be good. You never know.
You know, I don't really like Terry Bradshaw with Shatner.
Terry Bradshaw is pretty damned annoying, just in general.
You know, I'm a big Burt Reynolds fan. You go back and watch some of those, and Terry Bradshaw shows up in a lot of those old Reynolds movies, and he looks so different, muscular with hair. I mean, who's this guy? Who's this stud? Oh, it's Terry Bradshaw? He's still got the annoying laugh.
Who's this stud?
Well, I'm telling you, man, back in the day, the guy had forearms like a fucking baboon.
All the better to pin you down with, right? Where are we going with that?
Him and Howie Long in my nightmare.
All right.
Oh, I miss Howie Long in movies. Can they bring him back as the dumb fucking like henchman? I kind of liked when he was in movies for a while. Just not headlining him.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not digging that? You're not putting up Howie Long for James Bond anytime soon?
No. God, no.
Well, apparently that role is safe because Daniel Craig has announced that he is not going anywhere and still would love the opportunity to play James Bond. Maybe this is a little bit of press flirting since the Broccoli family, the producers of the Bond franchise, offered him $100 million for two films, reportedly. And he did say that whole wrist slashing remark, but that was taken so out of context.
You kind of have to do this if you're him, right? Don't you?
Just to quiet everybody.
If you still
want to
play, James Bond, or even if you don't want to play James Bond, if you want to work in the industry, you kind of are forced to play nice every once in a while, right? So no matter what his true feelings are about anything, he's going to say nice things.
So you think this is you don't think this is genuine at all?
Looking at past behavior, I would highly doubt it.
Yeah. No, you might be right. I mean, he acts like this is a burden, and everybody that plays this role seems to act like it's a burden to them until they're out of the role.
Except for one guy.
Yeah, Brosnan.
Who Brosnan really never fucking was pissed that they kicked him out, and he would have gone on and done however many he possibly could.
And to be fair to Brosnan, he was in the role a shorter time now than Craig has been in the role. I mean, Brosnan was our Bond from 95 to 2002. So what's that, 7 years? And Craig has now been in it from 2006 to, and going. As of last year, it was 10 years. So he's actually been Bond for longer than Brosnan, which probably irks Brosnan like shit.
Well, I like your idea of bringing Brosnan back for one.
I think that's a great
I just find that interesting.
It's a never say never again approach, They did it with Connery. They did it twice with Connery.
Could we do on Her Majesty's Secret Service? That's a good one. I mean, you remake that one.
Well, Brosnan to me kind of came out with it was almost he was trying to let them know that he was still interested in the role by doing the November Man, but that was such a piece of
exactly.
shit. And he's done things like After the Sunset, which he's playing variations on the character, right. And obviously Thomas Crown Affair. But yeah, I would love to see Brosnan come back because he's still got the look, and his version of James Bond would be fun to see in a side movie right now, like a little side project.
Yeah, it was just a funner James Bond back then, back then before, I guess, 9/11, right?
Well, no, because I'd say Die Another Day, which I just recently watched, which was being made during that. So I guess it was in production before 9/11. But it was released post 9/11. But even then, I'm going back and I'm watching. I thought, look, even the two that I don't care for, The World Is Not Enough and GoldenEye, which I've never been the biggest fan of. I always liked the ones that nobody else liked, like Die Another Day and Tomorrow Never Dies for the Brosnan era. But I was watching Die Another Day and I thought, how easy is it to watch this movie? It just flows right along like a James Bond should. Mm-hmm. It's not this grueling fucking ordeal that Skyfall and Spectre became that, it's just like we're such tasks to get through. Almost like it's the difference of a Tim Burton Batman movie and a Christopher Nolan Batman movie to me.
I'm not sure how to compare those two. In what way do you mean? Which one's better?
I just mean that they're just it's just whatever you feel on that day.
Aren't they both really dark?
I would say that the Brosnan James Bond movies are like the Tim Burton Batman movies in that they're a little funner, they're a little more chintzy. They show their seams a bit more. Where the Nolan
is that not just the difference a decade makes? As well,
I think it's also attitudes and tones. Have superhero movies ever been the same since The Dark Knight? It's unbelievable. I feel like we've been on
no,
a social
but I mean, Marvel really is different.
Yeah,
but
I know.
I see what you're saying. I mean, I agree with you. I think it was funner. I don't know. When I really start comparing things from like our, childhood or. Before we would, I guess, considered to be adults, even though we're both Peter Pan and we're not adults right now. But, there's that 9/11 mark for me always that it just seems to be very, very weirdly, everything kind of seems different on those two sides of that, and it's really weird. Yeah, but it's true,
In fact, I was going to bring up to you about doing a retro for Collateral Damage at some point because that movie is such a strange.
I can't wait. I want to watch that again.
With cathartic, exercise post 9/11 when I first saw that. You said you don't want to watch that again or you can't watch that again?
Oh, I do. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we should do a retro on Collateral Damage at some point because that has a very interesting history along with that terrible day. All right, moving on. Let's talk about Blade. Which has been in the news lately because Wesley Snipes has rumored that suggested that he would be up for a return. But let's be honest, that role would be recast in a second, right? If Marvel ever moved forward.
At this point, The most interesting thing I saw happening with Blade was the talks with Netflix, right? Which would be, I would say, a perfect place for Blade.
I liked the Blade TV show they had. I did too. They had Sticky Fingers in it.
So I would say, yeah, give that another shot. Let Netflix do it. Do it, you know, in the vein of Daredevil and Luke Cage and Jessica Jones. And it would probably be really, really good.
I think there's a button there somewhere. Is there a button?
A butt? No, I don't have a butt.
What
I mean, I would
Kate
see
Beckinsale saying it. What was she saying?
There was talk of someone asked her, if they ever thought about doing a crossover between Underworld and Blade. She said yes, but I guess at this point it's not a possibility because they're doing something with Blade. So something's in the works for Blade. Does that mean they're actually doing something? I don't know. They have it tied up. They're not interested in whoring it out. So they have an idea to do something with it. And last I heard not too long ago, it was a Netflix deal. And that, like I say, would be, it's the right kind of character, right, for Netflix, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It lends itself very well to that Creature of the Week stuff and
yeah,
plot lining. I would have loved to see a good third Blade movie, but instead we got Trinity, which was just a debacle, and with Snipes suing the studio and all this kind of stuff that just,
yeah,
it's a mess.
I mean, I still like Snipes, and I would like him in the role. Still, if they made another movie, but you'd have to think it would just be a financial disaster if they did that.
He'd be in the Whistler role at this point.
So it just wouldn't make any sense for them to do that. I really don't think that's going to happen, period, you know?
I didn't think we'd have more Underworld movies than we had Blade movies at some point in my life, but...
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah, well... Yeah. And between that and Resident Evil, what is Screen Gems going to do?
I mean, there's 10 movies between those two franchises. That's unbelievable. It's almost reminiscent to me, I'm getting nostalgic here again, of being in the 80s and like every horror franchise had at least 6 or 7 movies. And they, you know, Friday the 13th, a Halloween, and a Freddy every year. And they would just kind of keep outdoing each other in sequel numbers. I feel like that's the race now between Resident Evil and Underworld. And they always proclaim it's the last installment.
I was just going to say, Resident Evil is done after this, right?
Supposedly.
So.
Until they can do a prequel.
What is Screen Gems going to do? Yeah, they'll just do offshoots, right? I don't know. I don't know.
Let's take a quick break.
Yeah.
Let's come back with reviews for 6 new movies.
This podcast is a proud member of the LAM Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Okay, we're back.
That was us.
You got
we're paying the bills around here.
No one's paying bills.
Ain't nobody to pay no bills.
Bills are stacking up. All right, reviews.
I want to know what you thought of Tarzan because I highly recommended this movie. I really liked it. I want to know what you thought.
I mean, I almost want to ask you what about it that you liked because
you didn't like it at all, huh?
I didn't. No, I won't say I didn't like it at all. What I will say is that it's a bad idea to try to make a sequel before you make the first movie. And what they did was they made a movie and then the movie's full of fucking flashbacks, right? Because there's no basis. There's no grounding for what's happening.
There's no origin story.
So, well, there is an origin story. I mean, there's 2 movies in this. So it's very confusing, I thought. And so much to the point where it's just... I don't know. Like, you know, he's never Tarzan for a long time, except for in the flashbacks. And I just found it to be boring. You know, is what I'm going to say about it again. It's just so basic. Nothing happens in that movie that just makes a difference. I don't know. Nothing grabbed me at all.
The Samuel Jackson character was interesting at all. He didn't find that character to be a nice vessel for the audience.
Oh,
I like
fuck
that character.
No, I mean, he's
I
not even
he was humorous.
He is not.
I thought he carried the movie.
Humorous
honestly.
One time.
Yeah. Okay. When he's talking about the nuts and
the one time
jumping off the cliff. Oh, come on. When you get up to the talk and then you've got to jump off and he's like, you guys are fucking crazy. Yeah. That's what you'd be saying if you weren't Tarzan. If you weren't ripping off your shirt and punching a beast in midair.
It's a ridiculous movie, yeah, to say the least.
Of course, it's a ridiculous premise. That's you have to kind of go in with. You know it's ridiculous. The fact that a white guy's running around.
No, they show you too much, right? Number one. I mean, Tarzan is essentially Spider-Man in this movie, right? It's fucking stupid, man. It's too far. It's too dumb, even for me. And I watch a lot of really dumb shit. So this is it's just too much.
I thought your objection would have been the Margot Robbie stuff. Because she threatens to overtake the movie in a lot of terms.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that, but that's because it's a confused movie. There's no storyline here. There's no nothing, right? It's so basic that there's several stories going on at once just for shit to have something on the screen. I don't know, man. I really found that no emotional value here, even when it comes to the apes and the family and all that kind of stuff. And I don't know. I don't get it, I guess. I just really don't get it. And looking at the box office, I think that I think a lot of people would agree that it's just, yeah, you know.
It had a good multiplier. I mean, it opened up at $35 million and closed with like $125 million. So it's almost four times.
It's not great.
It's not. It wasn't a world beater, but it's a stupid. I mean, if you're ever going to do Tarzan,
you could have done this.
Wait,
I don't
Tarzan
think
do?
This is hard to do. I don't know that there is one, but I don't think it's hard to do one that's good, right? I mean, I watched the trailer for this and it looked good. Those scenes were in this fucking movie. Actually, those scenes were practically the whole fucking movie, but it's a jumbled mess, right? It's just a really long trailer. It's just shitty writing.
I'll give you that it takes too long for him to get into the Tarzan world, and that the flashbacks are a bit much, but it's better than an origin story. I didn't need to see the first movie. You know what I mean? I didn't. If this is the sequel,
you did see the first movie. You did see it though, right? It was in here. So it was two movies in one. I don't think it was a good thing. I think they fucked up, and I wouldn't have done it this way, and I didn't want to see it this way, and it doesn't make me want to watch another one at all.
Well, yeah, the box office did suggest that there will not be another one, so you're saved on that. But I guess we're splitting on this one, because I did find it entertaining. All right, what did you think of Central Intelligence? This is another one that I recommended. I didn't think a world beater, but I did think it had its charms. What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, this was an easy movie to watch, I'll say. It was fine. I like the idea. I think I'm at a place in my life where I like this idea, this construct of people coming back into your lives, you know, from a while ago, especially mm-hmm. the whole high school reunion thing.
Yeah, that was nice.
I don't know. It just works for me
gross
at this
blank
point.
Kind of touch.
Yeah, like right now in my life, I'm seeing this a lot around. A lot of places a lot of movies are doing this lately, and I think it works. It's a good construct. And it works here. You know, my only complaint is that The Rock, I don't, you know, rein him in a little bit. Just a wee bit. Because it's a bit much throughout this movie.
I agree.
But other than that, I mean, it's a fine action comedy. You know, there's nothing, as you say, like, there's nothing great. You know, I can't sit here and heap praise on it. But there's nothing to tear it down with either.
There's some solid laughs. It may go on for a bit long. And I think that once you see the celebrity cameo, who may or may not turn out to be a villain, it's easy to call that. Obviously, that's a bigger role than the 10 seconds he was on.
Right.
You know, you're expecting that person to come back because you figure they wouldn't be on fucking that movie for 10 seconds. But that's a bit of a bummer. And I would agree that The Rock does need to be reined in quite a bit. He's not nearly as obviously as funny as Kevin Hart here. And he's kind of left hanging a few times.
The character is just too wackadoo.
Yeah, but he plays it earnest. I'll say this. It reminded me when I was watching this of some early funny Schwarzenegger comedies like Twins and things like that, where he was like really invested. Even though he didn't really know what he was doing, he was really invested in it just as much as he was investing in, you know, as intensely as he was investing in anything else. So yeah. He gives it his all. And Kevin Hart and him do have a nice screen chemistry. I do like their vibe. So I'm curious to see what Jumanji brings. Because that's such a strange pairing for that movie with Jack Black and
But it would Jonas be a good pairing, especially I think because The Rock's going to be a little more of a straight guy instead of trying to be. I mean, because who's the straight person in this
that's
movie?
That's what I was saying.
It's like, holy shit, you know?
This movie.
So, yeah, so I think Jumanji is going to work better because if you have The Rock just be the action hero guy, it works great, you know, and he can be funny as that. There's no reason why that can't be funny. You know, he doesn't have to be the ridiculous person, but Kevin Hart is just. You know, he's a clown, and so it works much better if you let him be, you know, silly and a clown because he's fucking funny.
One
he knows what
thing
he's
about
doing.
Central Intelligence. Mm-hmm. I did like that Hart was the stud who had to regain that, and it wasn't the, you know what I mean? It wasn't The Rock as Billy Badass, even though he tried mm-hmm. to underplay that a little bit. You know what I mean? It wasn't The Rock saving Kevin Hart after all these years and the nerd and that kind of stuff. So I did like the role reverse there. What do you think of The Conjuring? I haven't seen this yet. Is The Conjuring worth watching, the first one, first of all?
Yeah, the first one's really good.
That's what I was hearing.
And this one was okay.
But better than most horror movies, or just okay in general?
Just okay. You know, because you have such high expectations, and really it's just a rehash of the first one. And again, my complaint with most horror, and even with the first Conjuring, but especially this one, is by the time you get to the end of the movie, you've gone too far. You know, it's silly. It's not scary anymore. It's just silly. Because if this shit's actually happening, it's like, well, fuck, you know?
Yeah.
I don't even know. Like, we're so far deep into it anymore, it's not scary, you know? Like let's throw some punches here. I don't know, right? So, I don't know. I do like the time period and the way that these build, both this one and the first one. It's just really till you get to the end. Either you think it's scary, I guess. I don't know if a lot of people found this scary, but it is scary on the way up there. I don't know. They don't mess around. They definitely show you that it's real.
Is this one of those movies where characters walk around endlessly shouting each other's names? Because that should annoy the fuck out of me in these kind of movies. Yeah, I can't do it.
Yeah, lots of doors closing, and then, we can't get through the door. And it's like,
Mary!
All right. Yeah.
Bobby!
Yep. That's what this is. You know, it's very, I don't know, it's very Poltergeist, really, when I think about it. But it's obviously not as fun as Poltergeist, if you want to call Poltergeist fun. You know, this is a lot more, you know, people, it's
sounds,
pure
like it's
evil,
more intense.
You know what I mean? Yeah. But it's that same kind of idea.
All right. Now, what about The Purge? Purge 3, election year. I really enjoyed Purge 2. I think I even put it in my top 10 of the last year.
Yeah, so again, I mean, I thought the same kind of a reaction to Conjuring 2. The second one of these was just such a fucking high point. And here you have just a kind of a continuation of that. So not really, I guess nothing, they didn't build it up. You know, I don't know. There should have been something in this that was like, that could step it up, I guess. I don't know. It was very much just an action, a very bloody action movie. What's that?
Is it a direct sequel to the second one, or is it some time after? Yeah. The same characters?
Yeah. I mean, and same world and everything. You know, you have the girl running for president who is going to try to do away with the Purge. So you have that the people who are purging the purges. The revolutionary guys. You have all that stuff in here. That was in the second one. All that's in here. So it's very much a continuation, or it's really an ending to it. I don't really know how. I mean, you could have another Purge movie, but I don't know how.
I just was so surprised because I did not care for the first Purge movie. I thought it was a cool idea, but I didn't like it. It was basically a Trapped in the House movie.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one, they opened up the world and it became so much more interesting. And that's why I thought this third one, they were going to expand on that a little bit more. But you're saying it's actually a smaller film than the second one? It's a smaller world?
It's not a smaller world. It's just that you've seen it all before. Which is fine because you recognize it all and you're like, oh yeah, it's from the second one, this is all that and this is everything else, but it just kind of plays out. It just plays out, you know, you're just sitting there thinking or just watching it, and it's not, there's nothing, I don't know, like I guess in the second one I didn't know what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, and that was really good, especially about a movie where you have a hard R and people running around, it's an action movie to boot. And people are getting killed. You don't know who's going to die. Well, in this movie, you know all that. Like, they don't.
Yeah, there's no stakes.
They don't really do anything. Yeah, you're just kind of watching it, and you're like, yeah, okay, this is how it's going to work, and then it just does. And so it's not interesting, I guess. But it was okay. You know, it was still good to watch. But just not.
Yeah, I
want to
see
know.
This one.
It was. It's kind of the problem with movies this year, right? They were just okay. They were movies. They exist.
It's going to be hard for me to pick a top 10 list this year. I know one of them that goes on is 10 Cloverfield Lane, but outside of that right now, I'm having a tough time. Another contender for that list, though, for me would be Deepwater Horizon, which was not surprisingly, but surprisingly very, very enjoyable. A really... it's hard to say it's a small movie when it's set on such a massive piece of machinery, and it's big in a lot of spectacle ways, but it's a small story, and Wahlberg gets top billing, but he's not necessarily the headliner. I mean, it's equally spread out amongst Dylan O'Brien, Wahlberg, and a couple other real strong supporting cast members. They don't do a whole lot in the preview showing you John Malkovich, who's excellent in this, and Kurt Russell, who steals the show a lot of the times. But this movie is a tour de force for director Peter Berg. Honestly, man, this guy doesn't get enough props. If you go back, I mean, Battleship notwithstanding, maybe even Hancock, but you look at The Kingdom, Friday Night Lights, Lone Survivor, I know you have your problems with, but it's still a good piece of filmmaking. And this, it's that same type of vibe where within minutes, I'm already in this world, and things that he does, filmmaking techniques that bother me with other people, like the documentary style filmmaking, he makes it feel so naturalistic, and it's very it's not precise filmmaking in that he doesn't get his angles and his compositions down, and it's not like some sort of Sergio Leone visual compositions, but it's so inviting and intimate that I fell for it. You know, it's like Paul Greengrass, but Greengrass to me seems so like he's doing it for looks, and this always worked. I don't know. Peter Berg to me is just underrated as fuck as a director. I can't wait to see what else he does, particularly a trailer we'll talk about later in the show for another movie he has coming out with Wahlberg. Mm-hmm. I think, unfortunately, these movies, Deepwater Horizon, isn't getting the kind of play it should be because of it's a bit of a muddled story, that there's no actual hero here, that nobody does anything spectacular. And I've heard some complaints that, well, they don't show for 87 days that the thing went off. It has nothing to do with that. This is about how the explosion happened and then how the guys did or didn't get off the rig. It's not interested in the politics of it all. It shows greed, but that's about the worst sin it's going to show. So
it's much as I said before without seeing it, but I'm going to say it's the story that no one gives a shit about. No one cares about this story, right? That's why I think people aren't seeing it. Whether it's told well or not.
Yeah, that's
something completely different. But I don't think this is a story that people were clamoring to see or to even know about. Even after you watch the trailer and you think, well, okay, I mean, it looks well done, but just not, you know, I really need to go to the theater to see the story.
I had
to
drag my ass over to see it, and I was glad I did because it is one of the year's best. But it, like you said, it's not necessarily a gripping story. Maybe that's what's missing from the movie, because there is an over the top factor that it's missing. You know, something to just drive it over. We were talking off air. I asked you if you'd seen Amadeus. And you said, yeah, it's great. And I was blown away by how good it is. And that movie and other movies that are excellent have things that push them over the edge and into, like, you know, great art or something that you can just pull things from or whatever it may be. But Deepwater's missing that. And I think it's the story, because Lone Survivor did that for me. I know you didn't like it as much as I did, but Lone Survivor was, I guess, a more intriguing story. Whereas this is an extremely simple story. And there's it's very quick, too. This movie's probably about 100 minutes long. And it goes by very quick. And the score by Stephen Jepkowski, I can never say this guy's name, Jepkowskiwitz, who does all of...
Jablowski or whatever.
Yeah, he is just on fire working with Peter Berg right now. And he really has a great score for Pain and Gain and this. So, yeah, I recommend it.
Cool.
Which means you probably will not like it, sir. That's what I'm beginning to recognize. All right, let's go with Angry Birds.
Does it
work my time?
In it. Angry Birds, are you a child?
At heart.
Well, Angry Birds was okay. It's really well animated. It looks pretty, but I mean, shit. It's just a real basic movie again. The birds are there. They're angry. The pigs show up. They steal the eggs. The birds play Angry Birds, basically, right, in real life to get the eggs back.
Well, you've seen a lot of animated kids movies.
All this in like an hour
recently.
And something fucking movie. Too long.
You saw Zootopia. You saw...
Yeah, I mean, Zootopia is real. There are like top-level tier animated movies, and then there are, you know, movies that people kind of shit out for the kids and stuff. This wasn't... I wouldn't put this on the same level as the Universal stuff. Any of the Disney or Pixar stuff. This is definitely... below that.
Okay.
So, and not that it's not fine for an adult to watch, you know. It's not like, it's not toddler level, but it's just not, it's just boring. You know what I mean? Like, there's not enough story there. The characters aren't quite rich enough to really capture an adult mind completely. So I don't know.
That's really always the problem with the second tier ones. The Pixar ones obviously are great at entertaining adults too. And even the Universal stuff is gotten really good at it. And some of the Secret Life of Pets and those ones too have their moments. But when they are these ones that are underneath that tier, they get real boring real quick. And they lose themselves. Really, the one that I was surprised at, and I kind of think it's like the litmus test, was the Nut Job. So I found that to be pretty entertaining for...
I don't know if I feel like I've seen that, but I don't know.
That was the one with the little squirrel and the bank robbery and all that kind of stuff.
It was Brendan Fraser, right? That's how you know it's good. Or at least that's how you know it's a box office hit, right?
Right. Yeah, because it's got a Fraser in it.
That poor bastard.
Just waiting for that next Mummy movie. He needs that paycheck. Somebody call him.
It's not happening anytime soon, but...
Yeah, they recasted it. Think about how frustrating that is to hear, hey, there's talk of a new Mummy movie. Oh, great. You're Brendan Fraser sitting around. You haven't worked in years. And they go, we're putting Tom Cruise in it. And he goes, fuck, I have no shot.
Yeah.
No shot.
Yes, a bunch of unfortunate events and you're done.
A couple bad career moves, man. Don't know.
Well, I guess don't say no, right? I mean, it's interesting. I mean, you talk about people saying yes too much. He said no to a Journey 2, and that's all she wrote, really. That was kind of the nail in the coffin.
Yeah, but he had already worn out a lot of... I mean, at that point, the year Journey 1 came out, he had already rode the Mummy into the ground, you know?
Yes, but there's no... I mean, that's at least a stepping stone to something. I mean, without that, he really just literally has nothing.
He's been in just so nothing. Many bombs. We could do a whole show going over the box, like Dudley Do Right, Blast from the Past. I mean, you could
That's what
go
I was saying.
On. And
he needed
on.
That Journey too. Without that, he's
Inkwell.
He's just
not
nothing.
Inkwell. What was the one with the?
Yeah,
the book?
Yeah, it was Inkwell. Inkwell,
yeah.
Inkwell might have been
Shit.
It.
He's. I mean, you can look over his filmography, and it's bomb after bomb after bomb, and then you say, like, "Oh, Gods and Monsters." That's a good one. He mixes in some good stuff in there. I always thought School Ties.
Gods and Monsters. Those are all old. They're all 90s movies.
Mm-hmm. School Ties was awesome. It really was.
Yeah. I like him. I think he would be really good in, you know, like a gumshoe detective type a role. But I don't know. You know? What movie would that be?
We need Tarantino to write him a role.
Seriously.
Get him back out of retirement. Well, there's a streaming online pick of the week section of this show, and I have to enthusiastically recommend a show that I'm absolutely in love with. And
hey
that
now.
Is Larry Sanders. Yep, the Hey Now, Hank Kingsley, and Larry Sanders on the Larry Sanders Show. Gary Shandling's HBO show that has been restored all 5 seasons, all episodes. And there's 60, 70 episodes on there. And they're beautifully remastered, and they're a joy to watch. I mean, these are 1990s.
Is it high def?
Gems.
I mean, is it widescreen remastered?
No, it's not widescreen. No, okay. but it looks great for what it is. I mean, I was watching these pirated these over the summer, and they looked like shit. And to watch these in their glory, and to see the people that spring up on these things, from David Spade to Mimi Rogers to, and it's so strange. People are playing themselves. It's so bizarre sometimes.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you grew up like we did, and I imagine even, you know, the young kids nowadays have, you know, the late night shows were just a staple for me, period. You know, all of them.
Because we had the
change. And
we
I still watch
the
them here and there.
As well. The Carson, Leno, Letterman,
we were,
O'Brien changeover.
We were, I mean, I, you know, religiously watched Conan O'Brien for the minute he came on because it was so different. And it was just great to see something on that was basically public access, you know. I mean, honestly, how many times, if you watch Conan O'Brien, the old ones, was he like, you know, who gives a shit? It's fucking 12:30 at night.
That was the
know?
Joke was that nobody was watching.
Nobody was watching. Yeah. Yes, and which with his show, I mean, it's not just a joke, right? At that hour,
right?
So to have a show that's behind the scenes is great. You know, of that. And that's essentially, he's kind of all of them, isn't he? I mean, with him, you know, having Hank Kingsley as a sidekick, you can relate this these characters to pretty much every late night show host at some point.
And the manager, the producer, who goes to bat for them.
Yes, I love Rip Torn in this, and his repertoire, whatever.
Twa is right. Twat you.
But yeah, Rip Torn and Shanling's performances are just great, especially together. I really feel like Rip Torn is really looking out for him. You know, I don't know. Everything just came together in this show.
And a great launching pad for your boy Hank Kingsley there, who obviously goes on to Arrested Development. I can't think of his real name, or Jeffrey.
I can't think of his real name.
You know, a guy from Transgender and the name of that Transgender. What's
Transparent.
That? Transparent. Thank you. Transgender show. Well, you know what I'm talking about. And
he's basically the Transgender spokesman at this point. Yeah.
The father on Arrested Development.
Yeah.
And he really, all those came, I always felt like, because of his performance as Hank Kingsley, and how they wrote that character so beautifully too. As much as he was a buffoon, they would do certain things. Like, they made him the man sometimes. You remember when the episode where he's hung so bad.
Yes.
Like, unbelievably, like, Hank, you know?
Yeah.
He, as much as he was the butt of the joke, he was also, kind of the man. So I always thought.
I love that he was so crazy, and I like the idea that him and Larry were friends, but they, because of the show, like Larry Sanders has this status, and he has a status, and they're kind of separate. And it's something that if you watch Conan and Andy, they kind of play on that same thing. It's just interesting. I don't know. I guess to watch this fake show and realize how real it is.
But it was bizarre too, because if you watched this in real time, you know, when it premiered back in its day, the people, so they would have, let's say, Clint Eastwood on, and he's shooting this fake segment for a talk show, and he's actually promoting Unforgiven, which is a real movie coming out during this period. And then they would cut like to the fake commercial break, and it would go into a scripted part, and you're thinking, it was so seamlessly done from reality, blurring reality and fiction. And what was going on. And I just thought, like, even when I was younger, like, how much fun they must have doing this. And are they really doing these interviews? And how did they actually put this show together? I mean, did they have an interview segment and they shoot it just like the normal ones? Because those interview parts are very laid back, just like they would be on a Leno or a Letterman. They don't feel rehearsed at all. Or not overly rehearsed, like a scripted scene would be. Anyways, we're going off here. Watch the Larry Sanders Show. It's available on HBO Go. It's probably one of the best sitcoms ever made by HBO. Let's do the Trailer Addict.
Trailers can be wondrous things, giving us insight into the unseen movies of the future. But when they're bad, fire photon torpedoes. Shields up, red alert. Prepare for Trailer Addict.
All righty then.
All right, let's just start with John Wick, because this is the one I want to talk to you about.
Wiki,
John Wick
Wiki,
2.
Wiki.
Wiki Wiki. Wiki
John Wick 2. Dose.
Is this not a beautifully edited trailer?
Is it? I thought it was shitty.
Really? I was amazed that Lionsgate Summit put together a fucking trailer that looked good.
Nah, the first John Wick trailer is better than this. I'm amazed at how... Again, it's so fucking basic, man. I mean, I just feel like it's so cookie cutter. Tell me it's not. The movie looks cookie cutter to me. This looks like just an action movie to exist. Whereas the first one had a little bit of wit to it, a little bit of charm. This looks just like, you know, I'm a badass. I mean, you know. Just whatever the fuck action movie shit you can think of that they say in this.
This is more of a demo reel.
Just God.
It looks like a demo reel for a stunt guy, and this is directed by a former stunt guy. And I thought that it looked just like the first one did, in the sense that like Michael Mann had directed a badass martial arts film. But I understand what you're saying. This is a teaser trailer, to be fair, and they're not showing us much. There'll
it's
be a longer
long
trailer later.
Teaser trailer.
It is a long teaser trailer. But I thought it was almost ruined by the narrator until it was Fishburne. And then I thought, that's kind of cheap. But then because the director and the crew...
cheap.
Are all Matrix alumni. They're all stunt guys from that. I thought, well, they're just recruiting the people they know at this point.
I get that, but aren't they just putting them into roles they're just... I mean, I really don't want to say born to play, but at this fucking point, I mean, you see Lawrence Fishburne turn around, you think, yeah. Right? That's the Lawrence Fishburne role.
I thought, oh, well, I guess Forrest Whitaker and Morgan Freeman were busy doing other
things. There you go. I know, right? Exactly. It's the same fucking thing, man. It's just like damn, you know, and maybe it will turn out to be a fun homage to these ideas of things that are currently playing in action movies, which the first one kind of was. But I don't, I just did not, I was not a fan of this trailer. If the movie turns out to be this trailer, I'm going to be let down.
What do you think about Power Rangers, the new redo also from Lionsgate Summit?
Is this what the TV show is like?
The thing to me is, you know,
this and I'm like, this actually looks halfway decent. This is not what I expected. I thought it was going to be super stupid, but it's 100%. Not.
I 100% agree with you. I get it now. I wasn't sure what it was supposed to be, but now I get what it's supposed to be. And I thought, okay, this is their
you
big
thought for kids,
sort of
right? I mean,
review.
I thought for kids. Yeah, for sure. Very much superhero. But this plays for adults.
I thought this looked like Fantastic Four with some Chronicle mixed in there. And, you know, Max Landis is very upset after seeing this trailer. He's penned an article that it looks an awful lot like Chronicle. And he's right to a certain extent. But to me, it just looks like your average superhero thing. Not to say it looks better or worse than any Marvel offering like, you know, Fox offering like Fantastic Four, the last one.
I mean, it looks lower tier.
It does, but it doesn't look.
But
doesn't
it looks
look
watchable.
As, yeah, it doesn't
which
look as
I did
horrendous.
Not expect. Yeah,
to show the suits? Do you think they don't get in the suits till the end of the movie?
They
do
show a flash of the suits, right?
Real
at the
quick,
end.
But they didn't show the whole thing.
And they don't look necessarily too cheesy.
I'm thinking that this movie is complete setup, in all off Fantastic Four from last year.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think this is going to be worth a shit where we're sitting here thinking, wow, this is amazing. But, you know, the people, the quality of people in this, you know, Elizabeth Banks, Bryan Cranston, you know, Bill Hader,
Bill Hader.
Yeah, me too, but I'm just saying. it has to be a little bit better, I guess, than you think of. I don't know. There's just a stigma with that name, Power Rangers, to me anyways. And this movie doesn't look anything like that.
I was too – I mean, by the time Power Rangers came out, I was already, you know, in the 16 era, so I was done with that. I mean, Turtles were my guys when it comes to this kind of like –
Power Rangers is just so cheesy. It was unwatchable.
But this looks better than the last Turtles movie, so fuck it. You know, I'll give it a shot.
Yeah. I'd say the same thing.
Now, what is going on with the Underworld series? First of all, there's a line in this trailer that says, I'm done with this war. Well, it's not done with you. That's how I feel about this series.
Right, yeah. I mean, talking
about... So she's a ghost now?
Just a stupid fucking movie. I mean, I'll watch it, but, you know, at this point, we're just pumping these out to pump them out.
Oh, this is the X-Men apocalypse, I feel like, of the Underworld franchise. We need one to fill the bill.
Yeah, we're so far departed from the original two that... I don't, you know, anything could happen. It doesn't really matter. Make up a story, throw Selene in it. You know, you're done, which is fine with me, I guess. Whatever. It'll be worth about, but it's, I look at its title, Underworld : Blood Wars.
I thought they'd already done this whole storyline. I mean, I'm watching the trailer and I thought, didn't we do this before? Or why have they not done this before? And, and the weird thing about this series, much like the Resident Evil series, is that, I can miss one here or there, and I can still get enjoyment out of another one. And, you know, they don't necessarily go in ranking order of good, you know, like goodness, I should say, because I think part two of this series, and that's about it. And in Resident Evil, I liked like 1 in 5 or something weird, you know, or 1 in 4. And it's just these movies are damn near interchangeable when they it's all said and done. I mean, this looks like a blur. And you could edit one long Underworld trailer with all 5 clips. You could probably have a fake movie in there somewhere.
The Resident Evil movies do have a progression to storyline throughout the series, right? Throughout every movie.
This timeline's all fucked up, right?
This one, no. Well, there's a time gap from the fourth one, from the one... I mean, the third one doesn't really count because the third one's a prequel. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the first one and then the second one's a real sequel, and those two go together. But then you have the fourth one, and there's a time gap, and one of the characters is now gone, and so it's basically just Selene. I mean, I guess it opens it up to more movies like this, but in a sense, you're just kind of spinning nonsense, right? You're just making shit to make shit.
I thought Len Wiseman was involved with this one.
I think as producer, maybe.
Obviously not direct. Did he direct the last one?
No.
I thought he came back and directed one of these.
He's producing this one. No. I mean, he did the first two. That was it.
We need to get him back on a.
He produced the other. He produced all of them.
But, so, you didn't think it looked very good? I mean, obviously, and you're a fan of the series.
No, it looks fine. It just looks like a Scream Gems Underworld, Resident Evil movie. And so, I think we know what to expect from that, right? Just kind of.
Sometimes
I don't have high expectations, I guess.
On occasion, knowing what to expect can
but
be
I'm good,
very comforting. And I think that the trailer for Sleepless is something that you know exactly what you're going to get. It looks like a nice throwback, does it not?
I guess. I mean, again, the trailer cutting here is on autopilot. Can someone cut a decent trailer that's fucking actually like... that doesn't have the bass decrescendo in it. It's not like just fucking, I swear to God.
It's the Transformer sound. It's what I always think of.
It just hurts my fucking head when they're doing it. I mean, this movie has it. What? And it's even put in a part that doesn't even fucking deserve it. It's like Michelle Monaghan. Like, introduces herself to him. It's all, what? That's, she's a fucking detective? That's badass? What the fuck's going on?
Well, this is the Jamie Foxx action thriller that starts off trailer-wise as Training Day or Dark Blue, and then turns into Taken, and eventually ends like John Wick, it looks like. So, I'm not really sure what to expect here.
I don't know what he is. What does he do? Is he a detective? Is he a street cop?
Or is he a gangster? I'm not really sure what the fuck's going on. But it looks like this is, I don't mind Jamie Foxx's bid as an action hero. I think he would probably make a fairly entertaining action hero. And I always thought T.I., the rapper who's playing his partner here, is a very capable actor. So I'm looking forward to this in the sense that maybe it can be a fun little B-level action flick that somehow escapes to theaters. I think this is a theatrical release. And I like Jamie Foxx. Like I said, I wish he would have not somehow blacklisted himself, it feels like, from good movies.
Yeah, I don't know. This is a step away from Cuba Gooding Jr. status. I don't know why. I don't know how he wound up making this, I guess. I'm a little confused. I really am, because this just seems like a Nicolas Cage movie, I guess some people are done.
Speaking of Nicolas Cage, he's got another film out. Last week we talked about Dog Eat Dog. We talked about The Trust recently, and the man does not sit on his ass because he has another film coming out. An Army of One, directed by Borat creator Larry Charles. And it looks here like Cage is playing a modern-day Don Quixote, right? I mean, this is a man who sees biblical... God and has to go and chase down Bin Laden.
Yeah. I mean, this is Nicolas Cage at his craziest, maybe? I don't know.
I mean, that voice he's doing is alternately nuts. Annoying and kind of funny.
I know. I mean, I don't know how much of this I could potentially take because it seems very much the same thing over and over again. But
in the moment, it looks funny, right? I mean, at times it looks...
Yeah, it does.
Fairly amusing and kind of off the wall. And it can't be as bad as Rock the Casbah. So let's give it a shot.
Yeah, I mean, just out of pure curiosity, it's so strange looking. Yeah, I would watch it, but I don't know. You can't... Some of these movies you can't imagine a theatrical release.
Oh, this can't be a theatrical release. This has to be.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, some sort of low like Netflix release or something. And Russell Brand looks funny in this too, playing the Jesus figure or whatever he's doing in this. But this movie, once again, just like Dog Eat Dog and The Trust, to me looks so fucking odd that I have to I kind of want to see it. I just want to see what I want to know what Nicolas Cage is saying yes to nowadays and why, because he is continuing to find interesting work in the B genre. I mean, he's not doing Cuba Gooding Jr. or Steven Seagal stuff. He's not sitting on his ass and just remaking.
Well, he is, but he's also doing other things.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that's
he's Nicolas Cage. He's unstoppable. He's doing everything within his, within a certain radius of his being. He's saying yes to all of it. Anything that gets sucked into his gravitational pull is being made.
He's better than choking out Vince Neil in Vegas. I love that video, by the way. All right, let's talk about Will Smith's bid for not Oscar, but this is definitely a.
I'd say so. No,
this is I to me this movie Collateral Beauty reminded me first of all of the bait and switch of 7 Pounds when I went and saw that a couple about 10 Christmases ago with a buddy, and we came out of it wanting to slit our own wrists. And that movie was so fucking depressing. It was one of the worst.
I mean,
things
this is just
seen.
A Christmas Carol, right?
That's what I say. A family man Christmas Carol.
I mean, that's
Carol,
what this
basically.
Is. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and, no, I'd watch it. Seems fine to me. Seems harmless.
It seems like a big audience holiday tearjerker, you know, a big studio tearjerker.
Well, it does have Keira Knightley in it, so and Kate Winslet and Will Smith, so
and Edward Norton.
I mean, we're yeah, exactly right. Helen Mirren. I mean, it's like Michael Pena, right? Michael it's Pena, basically yeah. describing exactly what you think it's going to be. So, at least it has that on its side, right? So you know what you're going to get when you watch Collateral Beauty.
Yeah, it's funny that you and I both obviously saw the Christmas Carol references and it's being a Christmas release, you know, with the people visiting him instead of the past, present, and the future. It's space, time, and love or something like that. So interesting concept in that being switched. I don't necessarily like that name at all. And I'm a little freaked out about like the way that this trailer started out and the character that couldn't be reached. It was a little bit too 7 Pounds for me, but this doesn't look nearly as heavy as that, which unfortunately that movie, I mean, Smith rebounded. Actually, the movie made money. It made more than Focus did, and Smith rebounded with that director, Gabriel Musciato. I can't really say his name. Italian director who did The Pursuit of Happiness and that one, the terrible one with Gerard Depardieu. Not sure. I'm sorry. Gerard Depardieu. Good God. Gerard Butler. Gerard Depardieu is mostly
the
bad ones.
Fuck one is that?
You didn't see that one? The new Gerard Depardieu?
No.
No, the Gerard
Butler. I must
Butler
watch
one.
It immediately.
Where he was the soccer coach that all the soccer mommies wanted to screw.
I can't remember the name, remember the name of that one either. Yeah.
That poor director was like blacklisted after that movie. And it wasn't
that's
his
just
fault.
As well because. All those movies suck.
Yeah.
So I'm fine with that.
I like Pursuit of Happiness, actually.
No Great Loss. It was all right.
Oh, yeah, that one got me. But that was, like I said, once again, a big studio tearjerker that came out during the holidays. I've seen it one time in the theater.
Yeah,
it got me.
Not game-changing enough for me to be able to say, like, oh, wow, let's have that guy stick around, you know?
Well, it's game-changers all day.
I do.
Day.
Game-changers all day. Otherwise, it's just, I don't know, some stuff. And when you hear, Collateral Beauty.
Isn't
that
much.
Title just bother? Yeah, it's just like, yeah. I just feel like American Beauty at this point. Like, okay, well, I mean, in the 90s, we did have a lot of names like this, but today it just feels, I don't know, it feels a little dirty.
It when Helen Mirren showed up in the trailer, I was like, oh, that's why it's called Collateral Beauty. It just like seems like she'd be in a movie called Collateral Beauty.
Yeah,
for some
exactly.
A very bourgeois fucking 90s movie. Let's talk about Patriots Day. Peter Berg and Mark Wahlberg's second teaming of the year. And not only do I think this may be too soon as a story to tell, I think it may be too soon to release this on the heels of Deepwater Horizon.
I mean, I really, really feel like Peter Berg is directing himself out of a job.
How so?
Why in the fuck is he picking these movies? This is not going to do anything. Why would he choose to do these movies in such a fast succession to one after the other without knowing that people are going to care about this kind of stuff or want to see this? You know, I just don't find this interesting at all. This trailer I really thought was, again, horrendously cut. And the national anthem slowly, once that plays, is just like, oh, we've gone over the top at this point too far.
I'm tired
because this
of
is
the
not
a cappella version of songs. That's getting real
well,
played
even
out.
Even that, you know, this is not 9/11, you know, and you're not going to be able to turn this into that. Horrific event, yes. But, I mean, come on. It feels like you're trying to prey on, like, you know, scared Americans almost at some point.
Well, we used to get these kind of movies in the TV format, you know, a made-for-weekly TV movie about some sort of...
Which I think is a little bit more appropriate, really.
But now they're getting the high-level treatment. You got Mark Wahlberg here, J.K. Simmons, Peter Berg behind the camera. And once again, it's looking to make like some sort of bid for Oscar play. And I think it confuses the matter, for one, because both these guys just teamed up on another real-life, although a different kind of tragic film with Deepwater Horizon. And now you have Patriots Day. Mm-hmm. And not only, like I said, is it too soon of a releasing pattern between the two, from Christmas Day and this Horizon was just out in October. It's only 2 months, 8 weeks apart.
Is but this a story, though, that you want to – do you really want to know what the police commissioner was up to during this time? Do you really want to know
– I don't know. There may be an audience. There was an audience for United 93, and I still have never brought myself to watch that.
Yeah, again, though, I mean, that's much different. I don't know. I feel like we're taking something much smaller and not even – I mean, we're looking at even a smaller piece of that thing and saying this is a story that must be told. And it just – to me, it feels like – not a story that must be told, you know.
So maybe I'm wrong about this scenario.
That's why I thought Deepwater Horizon was the problem with that movie. Even though, again, I still haven't seen it. I haven't seen this movie. I haven't seen Sully. So, but
so I'm making at the same time, all these.
Yeah. Well, I'm really talking about it, what you know. It, can you drum up an interest to go see this? You know. And so you know, it's possible. I mean, Sully has the advantage of being, I guess, a feel-good event. You know, like, he's a hero. Patriots Day, like, when you watch this, there's no hero, right? There's only tragedy. So I don't know.
I'd be curious to see which does better at the box office, Horizons or Patriots Day. I think it's going to have
a tough time
finding an audience.
This may do worse than Deepwater Horizon.
Especially during the Christmas season. I don't know if people are going to want to watch.
Yeah.
You know, you got Collateral Beauty on the bill or Patriots Day, and I'm not saying one is better than the other artistically, but
you're probably going to want to see
watching
the,
yeah, the beauty, Collateral Beauty,
the nicer of the two, or the
studio,
the uplifting, the more uplifting, yeah.
So the last film on tonight's show we'll be talking about is Get Out. This is the horror film from Jordan Peele. Is it Jordan Peele? Keegan-Michael Keegan? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
Added to those names. Thank you, Jordan Peele. And to me,
yes.
First movie he's ever written and directed. And I can't believe it's a fucking horror film. And not only that, it looks like a damn interesting horror film, right?
Yeah. So horror is fucking where it's at, man. Talk about game changing and doing something a little weird and thinking outside the box. Horror has been the surprising genre of this year and possibly of the last several years. And this, again, I'm watching this and I'm thinking, you know, even if this isn't good, it's fucking really different.
It's oddly compelling concept.
Yeah, even maybe it's not too different, but you know what I mean. Yeah, you've never seen it done in this racial split way before, where it's basically Stepford Wives, but with the black people.
Well, it's guess who's coming to dinner.
So
weird. People under the stairs. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah, you had this African American guy coming home with his white girlfriend to their very white, rich neighborhood, and all the black people there are basically hypnotized servants, and they're gonna get him. You know, it's like, oh,
it's got a very first of all, it's smartly obviously gonna be saying things about race relationships that are very topical and interesting, things you can get away with in horror films
because they don't matter to the story, right? They're independent from the story, really.
And it's got a nice Southern Gothic vibe to it. You know, it kind of reminded me of Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil mixed with a horror film. You know, it's a
well, didn't you feel like, just in this trailer alone, and I, you know, this is a pretty basically cut trailer, but I think the idea of the story kind of speaks for itself, and that watching this trailer, I was right there with this kid.
Yeah, I wanted
to. I was ready to get the fuck out, too.
I was watching the trailer, I thought, when he hit the guy in the head, I thought, fucking finally, and I'm only in it 2 minutes, you know what I mean?
It's yeah.
So I can only imagine what this is going to bring, but this looks right up my alley. This doesn't look like it's going to be... you know, I like horror to an extent, but I'm not into the Rob Zombie stuff. I'm not into like things that are absolutely good.
Yeah, this is more thriller.
Yeah, exactly. Horror, I'm into the thriller. That's why I think I like Don't Breathe a lot, because I do like suspense thrillers more than I like gory horror. Although I can stomach gory horror, I just prefer my tension suspenseful, and not a wash in blood. But great trailer. I mean, surprising as fuck, this guy had this in him, right? I mean. Where was this?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it is. He's very creative, so I guess.
And those skits, you know, some of them had tonally were pretty dark. So, I mean, I think that they had a enough time to craft their writing and directing style. I just, when I heard he was writing and directing his own movie called Get Out, I thought, oh, that's got to be some sort of comedy about a guy and a girl breaking up or something. And then I watched the trailer and said, holy shit.
Yeah, I mean, Blumhouse really is where it's at, I guess. This is a Blumhouse one, right?
Did I ever tell you I saw Jim and the Holograms?
Did you?
Yeah, and it wasn't bad.
Huh, don't tell me that, because I really liked that trailer.
It's not that bad.
And it made me want to watch that movie, but then I kept thinking about it. There's no way that it's any good.
I am so glad we were talking about this in like 1 hour and 9 minutes into our podcast, so people aren't like at the listening. Top hearing this. Yeah.
I'm editing this to the beginning.
Yeah. I think they might have tuned out a little bit, but no, that Gem movie was surprising.
It's
like,
on HBO, isn't it?
Yeah, I watched Rock the Casbah and Gem on the same day because those are like the two biggest bombs of last year, and I was like, oh, they're both ones on Netflix, one's on HBO. Gem was by far the superior film. That's what I'll say about that. That's all I had to say about that. We want to thank you guys for joining us on another episode of the Movie Mavericks podcast. This wraps up episode 309. The previous 308 can be found over on iTunes, Movie Mavericks, Talk Shoe, Stitcher, or wherever else you may happen to be getting these podcasts from. We want to thank you guys for your continued support. We want to remind you to check Movie Mavericks for the latest reviews and past podcasts, and go to our Facebook page where we have bunch of posters and updated topics. So join the page, connect with us, communicate with us. Speaking for Trevor Anderson, I'm Jason Rugard, and we are Movie Mavericks.
Thank you for listening to the Movie Mavericks podcast.
Are you candy asses still here? Beat it. The show's over. The big man has left the building.